It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and I want to start by saying just one word to you.
I just want to say one word to you. Just one word.
Yes, sir.
Are you listening?
Yes, I am.
Plastics.
Exactly. How do you mean?
There's a great future in plastics. Think about it. Will you think about it?
Yes, I will.
Enough said. That's a deal.
Plastics, as that man suggested to Dustin Hoffman's character in The Graduate, were once thought of as a miracle product with a great future. And indeed, they have transformed the way we live. As I look around me, I am surrounded by plastic. It's in my computer screen and my microphone and my pen, and it's literally enveloping me in the blended fibers of my clothing. But all this plastic is creating some huge problems in our environment, especially in our waterways. Now, that's led to a number of policy responses, which we'll get into later. And it's also the subject of a new exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago called The Blue Paradox. The exhibit is sponsored by S.C. Johnson & Sons, based in Racine, Wisconsin, just over the border. They make a bunch of products that ship in plastic packages. And that, as fifth-generation CEO Fisk Johnson explained at the opening of the exhibit, is partly why the exhibit is called The Blue Paradox.
It's a paradox because while the widespread use of plastic has led to considerable advancements and conveniences in modern life, it has also become one of the most pervasive pollution issues.
Today we're going to be talking about the water plastic puzzle in general and the Blue Paradox exhibit in particular. And with us for this conversation is Patricia Ward. She has a PhD in immunology from the University of Chicago, but more to the point for our conversation, she's head scientist and AVP of exhibitions and partnerships at the Museum of Science and Industry. Dr. Ward, welcome to the 21st show. Thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Joel Brummeyer, President and CEO of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Joel, welcome to you as well. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
And listeners, as ever, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Have you tried to reduce your use of plastics? Do you feel like you're doing enough? Do you see people around you? Do you feel like that's enough? We're going to get into that a little later in the conversation. 800-222-9455. So, Joel, I want to begin with you, and I want to sort of set a baseline on this issue. How big a problem is plastic in the Great Lakes?
It's big, I'm sorry to say. And I'll give some context for that. A lot of people have heard of the Great Pacific Garbage Patch, this sort of the vision of this like swirling mass of fishing nets and plastic debris floating in the North Pacific Ocean. Well, there is now data showing that the density of plastics in the surface water of the Great Lakes in some places is actually higher than the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. So we've taken this global touchstone for plastic pollution, and we understand that our problem in the Great Lakes is as bad or worse. Although it's a little bit different, and it's important to note that we don't have swirling masses of plastic debris or fishing nets in the Great Lakes. We're really talking a lot about microplastics, tiny bits, thousands, millions, billions of tiny bits of plastic swirling in our water that come from all sorts of different sources. So it's a big challenge.
I'm really glad you brought out that distinction because, you know, you can look at the Great Lakes. I was just up on in northern Michigan in the Upper Peninsula looking at Lake Superior. We looked at lakes.
Lucky you.
Yeah, well, it was a good place to be in mid-August, let me tell you. Looked at Lake Huron. I was stunned at how clear the water is up there. This is not, it could still well be polluted, right? This is not, as you say, plastic that we can see floating in big patches.
Yeah, so that's exactly right. The Alliance for the Great Lakes has a program called the Adopt a Beach Program, where we go out and thousands of volunteers every year go out, clean up beaches, clean up shorelines. About 85% of what they find is plastic. And we're experiencing, you know, especially as cities start to do a better job of picking up the big garbage and doing debris control at the beach, sometimes people show up to the beach and they don't see any pollution. They don't see any plastic on the ground. But when you start looking around, you start, you know, focusing your eyes, sifting your hands through the sand, you start to realize that there are bits, 1 millimeter, 5 millimeter, you know, 1 inch pieces, particles of plastic literally everywhere throughout the Great Lakes shoreline. And so you start to realize that just because you can't see all the pollution doesn't mean that it's not there.
All right, Dr. Patricia Ward, I want to bring you into the conversation now to talk about the blue paradox. Let's say, for those of us, obviously we're not there, but let's paint a picture on the radio. Describe what it's like entering this exhibit. What do you see when you first go in?
You get to metaphorically go beneath the surface of the ocean. So the story that Joel has brought to us through these compelling data points and statistics come to life in the blue paradox. When you go in, you walk down a ramp, you're immediately immersed in media that's all around you. It's also, it's visual, it's auditory, it's sensory. So you go in and you experience in the very beginning of the exhibit, a short film that connects you to the power and the importance and the beauty of the ocean and its role in Earth systems and our daily lives from all aspects that you can think of: transportation, economy, recreation, medicine, food, biodiversity, climate regulation, all of those things. So you first experience that very emotional deep connection to our oceans and our bodies of water and how important they are in our daily lives. And then you begin to dive into the story and subsequent rooms of the exhibit, or you get the story of the depth and the breadth of this plastic problem. Joel has talked about the data. You know, you look at the amount of plastic that's dumped into the oceans every year and also the Great Lakes. It's really quite staggering. And then the degree at which microplastics go directly into the water through some of the clothing that we wear, synthetic textiles where microplastics come out in the wash, to the tires on our cars driving down the street. So it's an enormous problem. But the data and the visuals tells you the story of where is the plastic problem around the world. So you see large maps of the world, you see how it lines up with the Great Lakes, you understand the degree to which microplastics are a problem, you understand where they come from. So you experience that in a very visual and compelling way that just rivets people. Then you move into a third room and you see a set of interactive kiosks where you can explore different kinds of questions that many people would ask. Well, why don't we just clean up all the plastic? Why don't we get rid of plastic altogether? Why don't we turn plastic into energy? And understand some of the ways that people are trying to address some of these very valid questions. You further go in and you see the problem of the dearth of recycling that there is. So there's another room which through a series of conveyor belts, and you see plastic products, containers, and the percentage of those that are actually getting recycled, which sadly is not much. Finally, you come out with a message of hope and a sense of agency where you can take a pledge and join in, and you can see what kinds of solutions different organizations, industries, individuals are trying to bring to light.
I'm going to ask you to put a pin in the solutions, and we'll come back to that a little later in the conversation. But Joel, maybe we can return to the Great Lakes and the plastic there. We were talking about these microplastics. What are the consequences? What are the effects? What does that do to not just animal life in the Great Lakes, but the animal life, the human life that surrounds the Great Lakes and depends on them, not just for recreation and fishing, but millions of people are drinking this water?
So I think your last comment there, you know, really raises up the most important concern. And I think that's where, you know, Dr. Ward mentioned that emotional connection. People in the Great Lakes, rightly so, are very emotional about their drinking water. And so we've got this unique situation where the same water that we use for, you know, it's not like the oceans, but we have the same water that we use for boating and sailing and fish and wildlife habitat and swimming and all that is also the water that we drink. And so any pollution that carries plastic into the lakes, eventually that plastic is going to get into our drinking water. It's going to get into products that are being made with Great Lakes water, beer, other bottled beverages, canned foods, those sorts of things. And that's a real visceral sort of direct connection. When people hear that, they think this is really wrong. There shouldn't be plastic particles in the water that I'm putting into my body, into my family's bodies. And that's a real concern. There are other concerns. Fish and wildlife can mistake plastic particles for food. And so they'll consume plastic particles. thinking that they're, small plankton, small bits of food, and obviously not getting any nutritional value from that. Plastics have been shown to concentrate other pollutants that are already in the environment. So plastic particles can attract toxins and other chemicals that are circulating in our environment and cause them to then accumulate in that bit of plastic, which then, of course, gets passed on if it gets consumed by an animal or a fish. And the effects of plastic, the whole production cycle of plastics and the consumption that we're all part of are starting to be made clear by scientific research that plastics can accumulate in the lungs, in the bloodstream, and have effects that are still being the subject of emergent research, but it's clear that they are not doing human bodies or fish and wildlife bodies any good.
How did we learn about this? How did we come to understand this? You mentioned you can't see it.
I'm glad you asked that, because I did want to put a little bit of the context around this issue, because it seemed like for a lot of us, it just came out of nowhere. All of a sudden, there was this realization that plastic pollution was all around us. But in fact, and this goes to the value of good basic research. In the early 2010s, there was some great research by a professor, Dr. Sherry Mason, out of New York, who started doing surveys of Lake Ontario and was finding these massive quantities of microplastics in Lake Ontario, and eventually looking at the other Great Lakes. And the realization at that time was a large portion of that, I think about 20 or 25%, were what was called plastic microbeads. And microbeads were these plastic bits that were used in mainly in cosmetics and some pharmaceuticals. And it was this realization all of a sudden of what we're putting plastics in a product that we wash down the drain on purpose, and then it goes directly into our rivers and lakes. This can't be right. And so there was this massive boost in awareness when people realized that microbeads were being manufactured, put in products, and then purposely washed into our natural environment. That then very quickly the state of Illinois banned microbeads, and eventually that led to a federal ban on microbeads that took effect in 2018. Canada did something corresponding. And so there was this, in like 5 years, there was this boost in the public awareness of the plastic problem. And people started asking questions. Okay, well, microbeads is part of the problem, but what else is there? And that's when you started to see this explosion of research into the plastic concentrations in the Great Lakes. And of course, globally, and starting to ask some of those deeper questions about, okay, microbeads were relatively easy to get rid of. What are the other sources that we really have to be paying attention to now so we can start to wrap the source of the problem?
So Dr. Ward, when you are designing an exhibit like this, this is literally a problem that is invisible to the eye in the context we've been talking about. What goes into actually making it something that people will, I guess, enjoy, is that the right word, or appreciate as they go through it?
It's a great question. And actually, this is not the only topic where we grapple with exactly that kind of challenge. How do you bring to light, and how do you make people connect with something that they can't literally see? So the designers on this exhibit did a really remarkable job of basically representing these particles of plastics through a little visual particles, if you will, that that coalesce, that take on different shapes. The way that they created maps and presented the information, it really is kind of quite extraordinary. When you get right down to it, this is an exhibit that is a lot of data, a lot of statistics, but because of its beautiful design and its ability to connect with people through the narrative and through the visuals on an emotional level, it really comes to life. And so people connect to it, they care, they feel something, they learn something, they become more aware. And that leads them to potentially get more involved.
Sure. And so we're going to take a break in about 2 minutes here. But before we do, maybe Joel, maybe we can just sort of set a baseline of some of the policy responses, and then we can talk more about that after the break. What are some of the big picture things that people like you at the Alliance for the Great Lakes and other organizations are working on to try and get our hands around this problem?
Well, first and foremost, for my part, I'll mention source reduction. And so when we know that there's a pollution problem, the logical first step is to reduce the amount of pollution that's going into the water, right? And so when we look at the life cycle of plastics, one thing that we're focused on, and I think the main thing that we're focused on, is reducing the amount of plastic that actually gets produced and consumed in the first place. I think that's a really important starting point for all of us to say, how do we get a handle on, using plastic where it's necessary, but reducing it and eliminating it where it's not. So thing we've spent some time here in Illinois working on things like plastic food wastes, what's commonly called single-use plastics that are effectively designed to be thrown away, reducing some of the most pernicious sources of plastics that are almost impossible to recycle, like styrofoam. So I think focusing on places where you can eliminate those sources is really important. Of course, there are also a lot of groups, organizations, cities, academics working on advanced recycling technologies. And this is a challenging area because people, I live in Chicago. I have my blue bin in the back, and I want to put all my recyclables into the blue bin and know that they're being put to good use, but that's not reality. And so, when we talk about recycling plastic, the reality is that very little of that actually gets recycled. And there are some real problems with some of these emerging recycling, or so-called recycling technologies that are out there. So
Well, let's
I
leave that
think
as a
that,
teaser for
yeah,
when we come
okay.
back. We need to take a break. We're going to continue our conversation on plastics in our water on the 21st show after this. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about plastic in the water, specifically in the context of the Great Lakes, because one of our guests is the CEO and president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes, Joel Brumeyer. And we are also speaking about a new exhibit at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago called The Blue Paradox. And for that, we're talking with Dr. Patricia Ward. She's a PhD scientist, actually head scientist, and a vice president of exhibitions and partnerships at the Museum of Science and Industry. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation today. 800-222-9455. And before the break, we were talking about some of the policy responses we might see. We were getting into recycling. I want to put a pin in that as well and come back to that a little later. And I do want to focus because one thing that sort of drew our attention to this is that Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin was at the Museum of Science and Industry last week talking about a piece of legislation he's sponsoring called the Plastic Pellet-Free Waters Act. Let's listen to a clip from some of his remarks.
50% of the trash that's being dumped into Lake Michigan, for example, is plastics. We don't think about it. When you do the wash and those microfibers off your clothes go out the drain, we don't think twice about them. They build up and accumulate and make a big difference, not only just in the ecology of the lakes, but in the wildlife that live in those lakes and the sea nearby. It's an indication to me that there's more to do.
All right, Joel. So Senator Durbin went on to talk about his legislation, but can you just briefly tell us what would it do?
Senator Durbin was talking about the legislation that would apply regulations to the discharge of what are called nurdles. So nurdles are these pre-production plastic pellets, a little alliteration there. And these pellets, these nurdles, are used to manufacture all sorts of different plastic products. what Senator Durbin wants to do, and which we support, is that US EPA should use its authority under the Clean Water Act to regulate the discharge of those nurdles in wastewater, so to make sure that no or minimal amounts of them are actually being released into the water. So it's a common sense step to reduce the amount of plastic that is going into the water directly from manufacturing facilities. And the senator also talked about, you know, the history and the upcoming work that's going to be happening on what's called the Break Free from Plastic Act, which is a much more comprehensive approach that gets into what we call extended producer responsibility. So this is the idea that if there's a major systemic problem like plastic pollution, the responsibility for solving that problem really rests with the companies that are producing it and selling it. It's not with the individual consumer to carry the burden of that. And that's a much bigger effort. And there are similar efforts that have gone forward in states like California, and they're being discussed in New York and Illinois. And what was really, you know, encouraged me about the Blue Paradox exhibit, you know, related to this, is that Fisk Johnson, CEO of SC Johnson, has called for and recognized the need for regulation to address this problem. You know, he knows that we can't solve the plastic problem without policy. And that's been really encouraging to hear. Certainly not a universal opinion from the private sector, but, you know, it's been encouraging to hear Mr. Johnson make that point.
All right. Well, Dr. Ward, I think that's maybe a good segue to talk about the role of SC Johnson in putting this exhibit together. The company's formal name is SC Johnson & Son. And in fact, the current CEO, Fisk Johnson, is great-great-grandson of SC Johnson, the fifth generation. We have a clip of him speaking again from the opening of the exhibit. I pulled this from a longer excerpt that was provided by the museum's PR department. Let's listen to that.
We at SC Johnson, of course, are a large producer of products packaged in plastic around the world. And solving the plastic issue and creating a circular economy is something that we've actually been working on for several decades. In fact, we launched our first recycled plastic bottle back in 1990, 33 years ago. But it has become very clear to us that business cannot solve this plastic issue alone, that it's going to require all stakeholders working together if we're going to tackle this problem, from government through greater plastic regulation to businesses and municipalities throughout the recycling loop, as well as all of us as individuals to make more sustainable choices.
All right, a couple of things I want to dive into there, but Dr. Ward, can you just talk about Johnson's role in bringing this exhibit to Illinois? What's the story there?
Absolutely. So SC Johnson's been a great partner for us because, as you can hear from Fisk Johnson's comments there, they are very, very passionate about this problem. They're passionate about education around the environment. And MSI, of course, shares that passion about science education writ large, and environment education is a huge piece of that. It's also our commitment to the environment and human beings' relationship to the environment is a really important topic for us at MSI. So SC Johnson's commitment to it, the Blue Paradox exhibit, which they produced and brought to us and supported our efforts to revamp an area of the museum that hadn't been touched in a long time. And so it's been a win-win situation for all, because at the end of the day, we have this amazing new exhibit about a very, very important topic that connects with people, that gets them to care about something that's really important. And that is really educational. We're finding, you know, people give us comments about what they experience, what they feel about the exhibit. And they're telling us that not only is it beautiful and compelling, you know, with its artistic aesthetic, but that it's important and educational, and they're finding it fun, and they find it very important for their kids to have experienced.
Interesting. You know, Joel, when I first heard about SC Johnson's role here, and I got to say, I don't know if this is the skeptical journalist in me, but I have to say, when, you know, the maker of Windex and Ziploc bags and Off Bug Spray is sponsoring the exhibit, the word greenwashing did cross my mind. But you said you are sort of heartened, I guess, by the role that Johnson is playing here. Talk more about that. Why do you not think, or what do you think about my sort of knee-jerk reaction and the word greenwashing coming into my brain when I first heard about this?
Yeah, I think skepticism is always a wise move in healthy measure. And so what I'm focused on is when I hear a CEO of a major plastic producer that sells a lot of plastic to consumers acknowledge that we're not going to solve this by voluntary actions. We're not going to solve it by individuals having good hearts. Those are important things, but we're going to solve this with regulation and with companies funding their role in solving the problem. That's what that's the part that I find encouraging, you know, coming from a CEO of a company like SC Johnson. Doesn't mean we agree on everything. And it doesn't mean there aren't also a lot of parts of the private sector that don't necessarily share that opinion. And I think that's one of the ways that, you know, people like Fisk Johnson can be good evangelists within their sector to try to talk to their colleagues about the importance of producers taking responsibility for the plastic waste that's being produced. That's a really important role. So as long as we're clear-eyed about what's on offer and recognizing that there's a lot of work that needs to be done to actually hammer out details, you know, then I think, you know, I think we've got a good basis to start that discussion about regulation. And so what I also see in, you know, what's happening with, you know, within the industry is, you know, this recognition that change is coming, right? States have already gone forward with, in some cases, extended producer responsibility policy, like California. In others, you know, outright bans on things like styrofoam. Canada has banned styrofoam nationwide already. You know, so there's a lot of momentum here. And I think smart firms are going to see that it is in their interest to be part of pollution prevention, to start absorbing the costs of keeping this plastic out of our water, and not to sort of defer and delay and hope for the best. I hope that more companies start to see that that's what's coming, and frankly, what the consumer is demanding, because nobody wants to feel like they're part of the problem when they are buying a plastic product. And some plastic products, as we know, are going to be with us for a very long time, even as we work to eliminate the ones that aren't essential.
Mm-hmm. Let me just take a moment to remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're talking about plastics in our water with Joel Brumeyer, who is the CEO and president of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Also, Dr. Patricia Ward, head scientist at the Museum of Science and Industry, which has a new exhibit called The Blue Paradox, all about plastic in our water. Only about 4 minutes left in our conversation. We did have a caller, didn't want to stay on the line, but Roy from Princeton wanted to know, and Joel, maybe I'll direct this to you. And I'm not even sure this is something you're equipped to answer, but if you can speak to the amount of plastics in our plumbing systems, especially when that comes to the effects on potable water.
Yeah, I don't have any specific data on that, but, you know, certainly we know that the pipes that our water moves through contribute to contamination. That's most well known as lead getting into our water from lead drinking water service lines. I don't have any data about the impact of plastic on drinking water directly as part of the supply. Mm-hmm. But I do go back to this, to the reality that no matter where your drinking water is coming from, it's almost assuredly has microplastics in it. And so they're coming from all sorts of sources, from food waste breaks down in the environment to you know, things that are coming off of our roads, to pre-production plastics that are being discharged, you know, many, many sources. And so, unfortunately, we are part of the loop right now. Our bodies are part of that loop of waste disposal. And we've got to do everything we can to, you know, get ourselves out of that loop so we're not ingesting plastic.
Yeah. So even if you bring the water into your house in glass jars, you know, you're still going to probably, it's filled with plastics before it got put in those jars. Only a couple minutes left. And Dr. Ward, I want to come back to you had mentioned that fifth room of the exhibit, the solutions room. What are you trying to leave people with? What do you hope they take away from this exhibit experience?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's really important that people leave with a sense of agency, that there is actually something they can do. They recognize, and the exhibit does a great job of showing the breadth and depth and the massive problem that is actually out there. And so it can be kind of overwhelming for people to go in and feel like, well, this is just too big for me to do anything about, or my family to do anything about. But in that final room, there's actually lots of ideas and inspiration for how people can get engaged, whether it's by taking a pledge on making even one small change in their life, maybe using a little bit less single-use plastic, maybe supporting businesses that are trying to do something innovative around plastic production and waste, whether it's getting more connected with the water, whether it's learning more about it. You can take a little survey and kind of understand your own plastic footprint. You can learn about some innovative solutions that some industries are embarking on in terms of either products that help remove plastic, say from the textiles that come out in the wash, or alternative uses for plastic waste turning into other usable products. There's also a great interaction with one of our guest facilitators where you can actually look at microplastic samples under a microscope that we collected from Lake Michigan, and you can see the problem for yourself. So having that impact at the end where you sense that there's something that we're all in this together, and it's going to take not only individuals, but the producers, the policymakers, all of us together to actually come to a better place in this pollution story.
There is more to discuss here, but unfortunately, we do not have the time to do so today. I really do. At some point, I hope we can come back and talk more about this balance between individual responsibility and collective action, because I think there's a lot more worth discussing there. But we're going to have to leave it there. We're out of time. I want to thank Dr. Patricia Ward, head scientist and AVP of Exhibitions and Partnerships at the Museum of Science and Industry, where you can see the Blue Paradox right now. Also, Joel Brumeyer, president and CEO of the Alliance for the Great Lakes. Dr. Ward, Joel, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st Show.
Thank you.
We would love to hear what you think about what we have been talking about, whether it's today's show or any show in the past, really. If you think we got something factually wrong, if you want to make a suggestion for a future topic, we do read all of your messages. Email talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. You can also call our voicemail line, which is 217-300-2121. We do share some of your responses on air from time to time. 217-300-2121. All the ways to contact us: phone number, email, sign up for our texting group, our social media pages. It's all on our website, 21stshow.org. While you're there, you can also find links to our podcast, or just search us out, The 21st Show, on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you download podcasts. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Kennedy Vincent, and Jose Zepeda. Our intern is Nick Boyven. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.